Well, hello there, and welcome to The Loveumentary, a podcast dedicated to finding out the truth behind what creates deeply passionate, connected, lasting love. In every episode, I sit down with one of the most amazing couples, love experts, or authors in the country and discuss the nitty-gritty details of what happens inside the most incredible relationships. We dive into the good times and the bad, the sickness and the health, the richer and the poorer, and how each couple has created their own version of true love. My hope is that you take something from every single one of these stories that can help you love more fully, deeply, and passionately. I'm your host, Nate Bagley, and I am so glad that you're listening right now. Today's episode is with David York, a good friend of mine who I met doing TEDx Salt Lake City. He's an awesome dude. He's an attorney, he's an accountant, and for his living, he helps prepare people's estates. He's an estate planner. And his ideas around wealth and wealth management and family values and personal values are really, really interesting. This is one, it's a really fascinating conversation to me because it totally changed my outlook on how I relate to my personal values and how my values can influence the decisions that I make in almost every aspect of my life. And it made me really curious about what my future values will be in my future family. So I hope that you get a lot out of this conversation. If you want to watch David York's TED Talk, go to the Loveumentary website and check it out. It will be embedded there. And I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Thanks for tuning in. So I'm here with David York. Hi, David.
How you doing?
So good. I'm just happy to have you on the podcast, man.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So David is an attorney and a CPA and a managing partner at York, Howell & Guyman. And he specializes in estate planning, but is... Here's what I like about David. So David and I met doing TEDx Salt Lake City. We both spoke, and David's talk was my personal favorite talk. I'm not saying that just to flatter you, but it like really, really made me think because he talked about a thing that I think it triggers a lot of people. And it's been really scary for me to talk about. I've wanted to talk about it on the podcast for a really long time and never known how to approach it. And it's kind of like the idea of money and wealth. And there's a lot of financial experts out there who try and tell you what to do with your money or tell you how to manage your money as a couple or as a family. And it always felt really kind of dirty to me. I don't know if that communicates well, but... When you talked about how to manage wealth and managing money, just this thing, light bulb went off for me, and I was like, oh my gosh, this totally makes sense. So I would love it if we could start off maybe giving a little bit of background on kind of what your TED Talk was about and like how you're kind of bringing humanity into an industry. I mean, when people think of lawyers and accountants, they don't think a lot of like emotional intelligence and connection and like self-awareness, and there's not a whole lot of humanity in the industry, but I find you to not really have that type of a message.
Yeah, no, or feel. I appreciate that. That's a high compliment. So it was really an evolutionary process for me because my undergraduate was in accounting. Went to law school, focuses was on estate planning. And so when I came out of law school, I really equated wealth to money. And really the entire financial profession, the legal community and estate planning is all focused on the transfer of financial wealth from one generation to another. And it's very tool-based, it's very generic, it looks and treats every family the same. And it assumes that the more wealth, financial wealth you can transfer, the better. But it really wasn't too long after I started practicing that I had experiences that really ran counter to those assumptions.
Experiences like what?
Well, you know, I saw families destroyed. I saw addictions fed. I saw people stripped of purpose. I listened to unbelievable stories of hard work and determination and sacrifice that were being lost because they weren't being passed down from one generation to another. Children had no idea what experiences their parents had gone through and the sacrifices that they had made. The other thing I realized is that the reality is, whether it's money or whether it's love or anything else, we value something based on what it costs us. Mm. And the reality is that inherited wealth, most people just don't value because it didn't cost them anything. And so
it's kind of like the Powerball winners. When all those articles that popped up at, you know, around the jackpot last week, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And they're like, how many lottery winners actually maintain their wealth and maintain like this lifestyle of richness?
Yeah.
And most of them end up bankrupt and alone and or killed or kidnapped and horrible things happen to them.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that just blew my mind is that there's never enough. If the focus is just on financial wealth, we had a client who over the course of 3 years made $15 million and he spent $25 million, ended up bankrupt. How does a guy making $15 million end up bankrupt? We saw people who could spend unbelievable sums of money and it was never enough. And so I got to the point where I realized that at the end of the day, really, the financial wealth is the lesser wealth. Mm-hmm. And when we simply focus on the lesser, we actually create problems. And I love history. And I love going back and looking at history. And it's really interesting. As you look through thousands of years, the pinnacle asset that people looked to try to acquire and keep and transfer was land. That's why people came across from the old world to the new world. It was for the chance to live and believe in freedom, and it was a chance of opportunity. And that really ultimately, land was the transfer of opportunity from one generation to another. But with the Industrial Revolution, the creation of capital markets, wealth became decoupled, wealth became decoupled from opportunity transfer, and you could transfer the end as opposed to the means to the end. And that's when you started to see a whole host of problems.
So explain that to me.
Well, if I transfer some land to someone, they still have to work it. They still have to protect it. They still have to preserve it. They still have to defend it. So you were really transferring a means to an end. Mm. But you still had to work it and have faith. If I transfer you a large sum of money, it's an end. And it can simply be used and consumed.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
And so, but the other thing that people would transfer is their values and practical tools. And I talk in my TED Talk about the Talmud. 5,000 years ago, it taught that the primary responsibility one generation has to the other is to teach them who they are, to teach them a skill or ability, and even to teach them how to swim. In other words, the whole point and objective was to prepare people to be productive, to be directed, to be intentional, and then to pass that on. And I think, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of that because we've narrowed down the word of wealth to simply just mean what's in your bank account.
Totally. So in a sense, what you're doing with this estate planning industry is instead of looking at your wealth as just a bank account that you pass on to your kids, you're looking at it as an overall set of skills, values, beliefs, and also money that comes along with it. And like that's an inheritance more than just a check.
Exactly. And the way I put it to clients is this. If you could only pass one thing, if you could pass your experiences, good and bad, your personal relationships and contacts, your education, or you could pass your financial assets, which would you pass? Invariably, every client I talk with says, well, I'd rather pass my experiences, what I've learned, my failures, my contacts, my relationships, because that's what created my wealth. My wealth is simply a byproduct. And yet, what does my profession, what does the financial planning profession do, is they focus on those other assets.
Yeah.
And they miss that greater part. And, you know, I love technology. I'm not arguing against technology. But the reality is the frenetic pace of life that we live, we send our kids off to school, we try to cram in a week-long vacation once a year. But it used to be that children would sit at the feet of the parents and you would learn these life lessons and you wouldn't need dad to tell you about his trials. You saw it. But we, because of the culture we live in today and society we live in, we don't see all of that. And when we don't intentionally pass those things on to our kids, we're actually missing the greater wealth transfer. And we think, well, I've taken care of my kids. I got them a life insurance policy. And you don't realize that really is just the lesser wealth.
Mm. So, okay, now I have one comment that I want to call out from your TED Talk that relates to this. I remember one of the most fascinating takeaways that I got from that is that the transfer of wealth, the benefit is not linear.
Yeah.
So there's a point where the transferring more money actually becomes detrimental to your posterity. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, one of the foundational principles of traditional estate planning is that if transferring some wealth is good, then transferring more is better. What's better than inheriting $10,000, $1 million? What's better than inheriting $1 million, $10 million, right? But what I found in experience and actually is proven out in studies is that there's actually an optimal amount of wealth. And beyond that point, you start to actually experience diminishing and even negative returns. And you go from a point where, as Warren Buffett describes it, a child can do anything. You know, if you have enough to pay for college, maybe graduate school, you have enough for a down payment on a house, you have maybe some funds to start a business, you can do anything. You just can't do nothing. But as you go along and you transfer more wealth, you actually can go to a point where kids don't need to do anything. And as I describe it, you go from, if you have no resources, it's very hard to get in the game. But if you have too much, you don't even need to play. Mm-hmm. And so really helping, part of what I try to do is to help clients identify that spot where we can maximize the positive benefits of traditional inheritance. And then let's redeploy the rest of those assets and really maximize the benefit.
That's awesome. So as a father yourself,
yeah.
So I mean, you've got kids, you've got a wife. In your relationship with your wife, how are you taking this kind of discovery, this principle, and preparing your kids? Like, how are you talking about these? How did you guys just figure out what your values are as a couple?
Yeah, really good.
And then how do you pass them on?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and one of the things that I've enjoyed about you, and I feel like we're both kind of on a journey. You mm-hmm. know, you feel like you keep learning. I think that's a great mentality to constantly be in. So this has been a process for us. Once I realized, okay, well, the old system is kind of broken, but what do we do and how do we do this? And one of the things that we realized is it all starts with knowing who you are and what you believe. If you don't know who you are, if you don't know what you believe, how can you decide what your next step is, right? What I found was so many of us, we don't even know those things about us. I believe that every person has certain core values that are either part of the fingerprints of their creator or they're born from life experience, both positive and negative. And quite frankly, I think a lot of our core values come from horrible experiences. We may value integrity because we had people who dealt
take
with
advantage
us.
Take advantage of us.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so we're all unique in that respect. And so that was the first thing I realized is I got to know who I am. I got to know what my North Star is. And so we really sat down as a family. We talked through it. As part of this whole process, we actually invented a game. it helps people to identify their core values. And so we went through that as a family. It was fascinating. I've been married 22 years. I learned something so foundational about my wife playing this game. We call it Rivets. That it's completely transformed the way we communicate. It's a game where it's got 44 different values, and you go through it and you pick them up one at a time, and you decide which one is more core to you, which is what I often refer to as the greater compliment, mm-hmm. to give or to receive. So if I were to ask you, Nate, would you consider creativity or generosity a greater compliment to give or receive to you?
That's a really hard one.
Yeah.
That's not a fair question, because I'm going to have to take like 10 minutes and think about this. They're both so good. Let's say generosity.
Okay, so generosity. So, again, all we wanted to do is...
For the sake of moving this thing along.
Exactly, yeah. So, what we did is we sat down. We had 44. The one that shocked me with my wife was she picked up optimism. Now, I wouldn't consider her pessimistic by any stretch of the imagination, but it still surprised me. So I asked her, I said, why optimism? And she says, I always need hope. No matter what the circumstance, no matter what the situation, no matter how dark it feels, as long as I have hope, I can keep moving forward. I can keep stepping forward. Well, the problem is, whenever I face a difficulty or trial, my initial gut reaction is, there's no hope. It's hopeless, you know. I just throw my hands up, and
fatalistic.
So I'm just very, yeah, that's just my initial gut. Exactly. Now, I eventually come around, but what I found was that caused a lot of contention in our family, because when a difficult situation comes along, what is she grasping to? Hope. What am I coming with? Hopelessness. And so just realizing, one, there's always hope. It really challenged me. But two, just in how I communicate with her, it was really transformational. So just learning that. So anyway, through that process, our family identified five values that we all agreed on. Okay, this is central to who we are. This is what makes us Yorks. And it's been fantastic. It really creates a rallying cry for us. We've created some things that we actually carry around with us that remind us of who we are and what we value. Once you have that, as Roy Disney said, once you know what your values are, then it's easy to make decisions. So that's where I think you have to start.
Totally. That's awesome. So you said something earlier before we started recording that really kind of hit home with me, and it was how most people probably know their businesses.
Yeah.
Core values, and they don't even know their own family's core values.
Yeah.
So how would you, first of all, we're going to link on the blog. If anybody is interested in checking out this game Rivets that you guys designed, they can go to the blog and we'll give them, there'll be a link there where they can go find more information.
Yes.
And that'll be really cool. So that's a great resource.
Yeah.
But what are some other ways that people can kind of discover their values that you've experienced?
Yeah, one of the things that I mentioned was life stories. We've got this list of different values, and so we go through it, and we just ask people in the family, or I'll meet with couples, what sticks out to you and why? I had a good friend of mine who we were talking about this. And on his very first date he ever went on, he told his wife, I just want you to know how much I value honesty in relationships. She's like, okay, that's a little heavy for a first date, but okay. So I asked him later, I said, why honesty? And he said that when he was a child, his dad had an affair, and he saw the effects that it had on his mom, how devastating it was to her. And he committed right there that he would always be honest in his relationships. And so to me, that's beauty from ashes. He took a tough experience and he internalized it into a core value. And it's what drives you. It's what motivates you. It's what makes you tick. And what I love about values is each person's is unique, but you take those together and it creates a mosaic. As we were talking about earlier, the values of justice and mercy, who doesn't want justice? Why do we love the good guy, bad guy movies? It's because we love justice in our heart, right? We love it when the bad guy gets
his penance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, what do we want in life? We want mercy, right?
You know, people to throw us a, throw us a bone, and it's okay. You can have another chance.
Exactly. Well, those are two great values. If we're not careful, they can really actually cause derision. You see that culturally in the context of the death penalty. You know, if we can at least step back and understand what our values are, why we're so passionate about those, but then realize that other people that we may have conflict with, they're really just coming with a different set of values. I think it actually can help from a communication standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then the other way to do it, you can play the game with multiple people, and I call it a secret Santa, where you actually, you play for someone else. I was talking with a family this morning, and they said it was just amazing, because what they would do is they would go through one at a time, and they'd put a card down, and someone would say, oh, that's mom, you know, I see that in her. And then they'd turn over another one, and they go, oh, that's dad. And the dad said, really? And they're like, oh, we totally see that in you. And so sometimes there are values that we have that we express, but we don't actually know them. And so one way of doing it is just talking with others and seeing those things that we will sometimes be our harshest critics. So sometimes you need to go to someone else to help you as you go through that process.
Totally. And what's that done for you and your relationship with your wife and your family, discovering these values and starting to like really... I'm assuming now they're like a part of your regular conversations. They're a part of your life. How have you seen a transformation in your family and a shift?
Yeah. In fact, one of the most interesting moments, one of my son's values, and it's one that made it into our top five, is loyalty. He is just such a loyal person, and he so values loyalty. And so we added that in there. And so as I've thought about this, I've said, okay, I value loyalty. And I did that every day for a couple of weeks. And then one day I just realized, no, I'm loyal. I am loyal. And that transformation, when it goes from your head to your heart, makes such a difference. And that intentionality, I think, is so meaningful. And so now when we've had conflict, and we have conflict, we're family, we're people, we have conflict, we have issues. But it's actually helped me to realize, okay, now wait a second, we're all together, we are loyal to one another, so we're going to deal with this conflict because loyalty is part of who we are and what we believe. That makes sense?
Totally makes sense. That's actually really beautiful. I like that a lot. How do these values kind of, I want to cycle back to money for just a second, but can learning these values affect the way that you communicate about your finances?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, our finances simply follow our intention or our lack of intention. And the reality is so many of us aren't intentional in life. And so we aren't intentional with our finances.
Right.
And yet if we can understand who we are, what we believe, then we can actually apply our resources, our time, our talents, and our money to those things that are actually most important. And again, I firmly believe that everyone has values, but I also think that too many of us live with a lack of intention. And so we see chaos with our time. We see chaos with our finances. We see chaos with our relationships because we don't know those fundamental things about us. And so I think once you understand that, okay, then we can purpose our finances towards what we actually value.
That's interesting, because you probably know that finances are a huge point of conflict for a lot of couples and are one of the leading causes of divorce. But it sounds to me like it's probably not the finances themselves that are the cause of divorce, but it might be a conflict of values.
Yeah.
Like where maybe somebody really values trust, and if their partner goes out and spends money without asking and overspends on their budget or whatever, then they feel unsafe and they feel like their values have been compromised. Or maybe somebody else, you know, values freedom to go out and spend on what they want.
Yeah, it's my money. I'll do with it what I want.
Or somebody really likes like order and organization, and they need to have like a set, and somebody else is more, I don't know. It just, it's starting to click for me in my brain, like, oh, this is maybe the money, maybe the money conflict that people go through is just the smoke, and then the actual fire is the values that are being compromised or that aren't being respected or aren't being heard or understood.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. We so often in our culture ascribe morality to money. Mm-hmm. Money is good. Money is bad. You see that even in the political context. The reality is money is a tool. That's all it is. It's amoral. I like what Dave Ramsey says. It's a brick. I can use a brick to build a hospital, or I can throw it through a window. Mm. It just is what it is. Is it constructive or is it destructive? Well, it just is. And so it's not what it is, it's how we use it. But I totally agree with you, and I see so much conflict that can occur because people are using it as a tool to express how they feel, or use it to express what they value. But when you have that lack of communication, and oftentimes you don't even know why you're doing it. And so that's why I think it's so important to take that step back.
Mm. That's so powerful. What are some examples of people from history, you said you like history, who maybe had, who didn't pass on their values as opposed to maybe somebody who did, in the difference of, in the outcome?
Yeah, so, and I talk about this in the TED Talk, but to me one of the most fascinating stories is the story of Cornelius Vanderbilt. When he died, he was the wealthiest man in America. The average American inheritance today is about $177,000. That's what the average person will inherit at their parents' passing. When he died, he left $185 billion. So more than 1 million times that amount. And yet within just 30 years, there was not one member of his family among the wealthiest in the world. And within 100 years, there was not one millionaire in the group of his descendants.
Holy crap.
Yeah, $185 billion. And to me, that's tragic, not just because it was such a waste, but because of how many people it sidelined. How many generations, what scientists, what artists, what philanthropists, world changers were there in that line of descendants that were completely sidelined because they didn't need to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you see so many stories of people who were able to accomplish so much. It's because of the human capital that was passed from one generation to another. You know, I talk about Walt Disney. His story was interesting. His parents were hardworking, blue-collar family. He was the fourth oldest. And Walt used to have to get up every morning to deliver newspapers at 4 a.m. before he went to school. And he tells stories of going and playing with kids' toys who had left it out on the porch at 5 o'clock in the morning because he couldn't afford his own toys. But he showed an artistic ability. And so even though his parents had very little, they actually enrolled him in art classes at the Chicago Art Institute and other schools to help him develop those skills and those abilities. He actually, one of his first paid jobs, because his dad took, he didn't get any of the money from delivering newspapers. His parents kept it so they could live. But one of his first paying gigs was to draw a horse for a local dentist. So his parents, yes, they taught him hard work. They taught him determination. It's interesting, his father actually worked at the Chicago World's Fair. And in there, they built a lot of stuff with facades. How Walt learned how to build Disneyland was from his father having worked at the Chicago World's Fair in the late 1800s. So he passed human capital. But he also saw talents and abilities, and they helped foster that. And then what some people don't know is the only reason Walt was able to start Walt Disney was from a loan from his older brother, Roy. And so it was really a family affair. And you wonder, without those, you know, those opportunities, you would have this lost talent. So he's just one of countless examples of people who the focus was on the transfer of human capital, limited amounts of resource, and they were able to multiply it.
That's so interesting. It's interesting to see the difference in somebody who passes on only money and no human capital, and then somebody who passes on all human capital and no money, and the difference in the outcome and the impact, and not only that, not just the outcome for the child mm-hmm. or for the family, but the impact for the whole world.
Right.
That's the fascinating thing to me is like the money really has very little, if any, effect on the lasting outcome of the impact that your family can have on the world.
Right. Yeah.
That's really fascinating to me.
Yeah. One of my favorite shows is City Slickers. Did you ever see City Slickers?
Nope. Do I need to watch it?
So yeah, it was a good show. It was with Billy Crystal. He and a bunch of guys. They're middle age. They're searching. They're completely lost. You know, they're just kind of groping for the next thing. They decide to go to a dude ranch for fun. And Billy Crystal's just kind of lost. He's kind of visionless, really. He's got the goes to work every day. He's got the teenage kids, you know. And so he's out on the riding along, and the old cowboy that he's riding with, you know, recognizes how lost Billy is. And he says, the cowboy says to Billy Crystal's character, "The secret of life is just this." And he sticks up his finger. And Billy Crystal says, "It's your finger?" He goes, "No." He goes, "It's one thing." He goes, "Once you get that one thing, everything else will fall into place." And Billy Crystal said, "Okay, well, what's the one thing?" He said, "That's what you got to find out." And his whole point is, until you understand who you are, what your vision, what that one thing is, everything else is going to just be chaotic.
Yeah.
Once you find that one thing, then everything else kind of falls into place.
And then I think once you find that one thing, it allows you to live what you said earlier, like really intentionally.
Exactly.
So can you tell me a little bit more about what it looks like to you to have an intentional life, to live like with that? It has the air, and I've used the word intentional living on the podcast before, and it does have this kind of hippy dippy kind of feel to it, like oh, you just got to be intentional, you know. But there's substance to it, and I want to see if we can kind of get to that.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. I tell people I think all new wisdom is really just old wisdom we've forgotten. I don't think this is stuff that is new. Families used to have these. They were called mottos. Families would have a motto that would create direction and purpose. And they used to have logos. They'd call them family crests, right? Mm-hmm. The family crest would tell the story of the family. Why do we have a sword on our family crest? Because we believe in duty, and we believe in defending our land, defending our country, defending our values. And so we are the type of people that step forward. And so I think that those kind of things are important. You see that in business. And that was one of the things, honestly, that just really convicted me was I'm so intentional at work. I'm so intentional in different organizations and things that I'm a part of. But where's that intention? You know, and you look back, you know, you look at Steve Jobs, you know, and you look at Apple. They were so intentional. We make simple, beautiful devices that can transform the world. They did, because they were intentional about how they did that. And yet, you know, we need to bring that same level of intentionality into a family. And really, a family is just like a business, except we don't get to choose our family, right? So there's not that same volition. But
you can choose who you marry.
Well, that's absolutely.
It's a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can take those same principles that we learn in successful businesses and apply those to families to create intention and direction realizing we're each unique, but we each have a part to play.
It's really interesting that you say that, because I think we do spend a lot of time on, like, how do you optimize business, or how do you, and we don't think about how do we optimize our relationships. One thing that's fascinated me lately is the principle of, if you measure something, it improves, and if you measure and report on it, it improves exponentially. It's called Pearson's Law, I think. And I'm like, well, how often do people measure and improve their performance as a spouse or a father? And, like, imagine what it would be like if once a week or even every day before you go to bed, you sat down with your wife and said, hey, on a scale from 1 to 10, how great of a husband was I today? She's like, 8. Okay, well, what can I do tomorrow to be a 10? Like, what did I miss out on today? And you start tracking your performance. Oh, man, what really means something to her is when I, like, help around the house. And the days where she rates me a 7 or an 8 or a 6, it's because I wasn't attentive with the kids, or it's because I showed up late from work and wasn't spending time with her like I promised I would. And you start to get a real idea of, like, what do I need to do to be an amazing partner? And that it's just funny how there's these business principles that, like, if I had a job, I would have performance metrics and KPIs and whatever. But when we look at our family life and our relationships, we don't do that. When we are in a job, we have a business, we have values, and we want to extend those values to our customers. But do we do that with our kids and with our spouse?
No, I could not agree more. We talk with families about what we call AJAR. And it's... We didn't want to use, like, a SWOT analysis, you know, talk about our weaknesses, our threats. But so we talk about AJAR. A stands for assets. What are the assets that we have? And that's not just your financial assets. That's what are our strengths? What are our capabilities? What are the things that we can do? J is, what are the jeopardies? What are the things out there that are potential risks or hazards or those kind of things? A is aspirations. What do we aspire to? What do we want to become? And then R is, what are the results? And how are we going to measure this? Because I completely agree with you. We can be aspirational all day long. If we can't measure it, what good is it? And so really think through, okay, how are we going to quantify this, the results of what we aspire to be? I have some friends who just amazing people, and we were talking about this vision statement, creating a family motto, and they said, oh yeah, when we got married, we had ours, and theirs is to help every person that they meet move one step forward to their goals and their dreams. And these people live it out. Every time I see them, they say, how are you doing? What are you working on? And how can I help you? And they don't let me walk away until they've done something. Maybe that's it's so connect cool. me to someone else. Maybe it's just encourage me. Maybe it's to say, okay, I'm going to ask you in 2 weeks how you're doing.
Hold you accountable.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They are so intentional as a couple. And when they told me their vision statement, what they aspire to, I'm like, that's totally you guys.
I want to put these guys on the podcast.
They are amazing. They're a fantastic couple. You would, it'd be your best one ever. They and their characters, too. He was funny. I consider him incredibly optimistic, and we played the game. He threw down that optimism card faster than I could even believe, and I said, you're going to be kidding me. You're one of the most optimistic people I know. He goes, no, I'm one of the most pessimistic people in the world. So that anytime anything turns out well, I'm surprised and happy, you know? So he's like, I like to set the bar incredibly low so that it's always...
You're always surprised.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I expect this cheesecake to be horrible. So then when it tastes good, it's a positive, you know? And so, but they are intentional people, and you see that. And again, that's what part of what encouraged me on this process.
I love that. So my big takeaway from this is the huge importance from this conversation that, like, that it's so, so important to figure out what your values are as a couple or as a family. And that those values are going to help you live an intentional life and create real wealth, which is not just finances, but it's the skills and it's the values and it's the beliefs that you're going to pass on, the tangible, maybe they're intangible, but the what did you say, the
Human capital.
The human capital. And there's the land that had the potential.
Opportunity.
Yeah. So you're passing on opportunity instead of just like money.
Yeah. And it's really just aligning those intangible assets, that human capital, with your financial resources. But you have to know who you are and what you believe before you can do any kind of alignment.
That's awesome. Well, I'm hoping that people who listen to this podcast go to the website, loveyoumentory.com, check out the blog that accompanies. Just do a search for Love You Mentory, David York, and we'll have information on there on the Rivets game and how you can get a hold of it so you can like really get clear on your values and help your family to kind of like jump on this bandwagon of intentional living. Because honestly, the more I learn about couples who live this way, the more I can't even imagine living another way.
Yeah.
I see some couples who struggle for decades to kind of have this realization. And then when they figure out like, oh, we don't have to live like everybody else, and actually we should be customizing our relationship for us and what's important to us, that's when people transform and their relationships and their families transform and like amazing, beautiful things happen, and the impact that they have on the world grows hugely.
Yeah. Oh, couldn't agree more.
Yeah. I'm really glad that I'm glad we're friends, man.
And yeah.
I'm really glad that you took some time out to spend share your knowledge with
anytime.
Yeah. Cool. Is there any parting words of advice or wisdom you want to impart upon myself or the listeners?
No, like I said, I think just taking that first step, it can seem like so overwhelming. Just take a first step, and I will promise that you will be surprised. Like you said, just looking at those two values of generosity or creativity, that self-reflection, part of knowing, being good in a relationship is knowing who you are too. And it's fun. But just start with that first step and the rest will come in line.
Such a champ, man. Awesome. Well, thanks, dude.
Appreciate
you being on.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with David York. What did I tell you? The dude is a champ. Go to the Love You Mentory website to watch his TED Talk and to get a link to his business if you want him to be your estate planner. And I hope you have an amazing week. Look forward to next week's episode. It's going to be really great. My new friends that David introduced me to and actually mentioned in this episode are going to be on it. Their names are David and Gretchen, and it's going to be one of your favorite episodes of all time. I'm just going to leave it at that. It's going to be fantastic. So have a fantastic week, and I love you. And then beat the bastards with it. And always hold on when you get love, so you can let go.